If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. The phone number to call and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. Thank you for joining us again tonight. We've got some great guests lined up. We've got Kathy Henners, one of the resident experts on the Islamist threat in Tennessee, with us. And a little later on, we'll be joined by John Harris. He's president of the Tennessee Firearms Association. He'll be filling us in on what's going on up in Nashville in regards to gun legislation. Just a few quick announcements here before we get to our first guest. We have a very important event coming up in Jackson, Tennessee at Union University on Thursday, February 27th. This event is sponsored by the 7th and 8th District Tea Party Coalitions. Sheriff Richard Mack will be the keynote speaker at this event. Also speaking will be Executive Director of the Tennessee Firearms Association, John Harris, our guest tonight, as well as candidate for Tennessee U.S. Senate Joe Carr, who is running against Lamar Alexander in the August 7th primary. Our special honored guests will be Senator Mae Beavers, Representative Judd Matheny, and Andy Miller. You need to meet these fighters for our Constitution, state sovereignty, and founding principles. You won't be bothered with any rhinos at this event. This is a rhino-free event, so you want to be there. Just go to the website, tn8tpc.org, Sheriff Mack event, and get your tickets. You have to get tickets online. We can't sell any at the door, so go online, get your tickets. It's just $30, and you'll have a great time. If you've got friends who are in law enforcement, or if you happen to be in law enforcement, there's going to be a special event for law enforcement at like 3:30. But just go to the website, tn8tpc.org. You can get your tickets. You can find out more about this event. And a couple other things here. I want to play something for you real quick. Oh, actually, before I do that, let me cover this. There's an annexation bill in our legislature that's having some trouble. It's got a lot of support in the House. The House version is by Van Hus, and it's House Bill 590. A lot of support there. We think it would get through. The Senate bill by Senator Crow that was written up as Senate Bill 869, but for whatever reason, he is not intending to run this bill. Well, if he doesn't run this bill, then the companion bill, House Bill 590, is dead. It appears that there seems to be a push to get a bill that's being pushed by Senator Norris that would essentially just keep the moratorium in effect for another year. And forced annexation, if you're not aware of what that is, that's where a metro area can annex on their own volition, pretty much, the county area just outside. All right, so people don't have a say in it. So we want to stop that. We want to make sure that not only can a city not annex, but anytime the issue of annexation comes up, the people who are going to be impacted by it get a vote. So we need to get in touch with Senator Crow's office, and I apologize, I cannot find the number here. Oh, excuse me, 615-741-2468. 615-741-2468, that's Senator Rusty Crow, and call him and encourage him to run his bill for forced annexation. And Common Core, I'm reading off of an email I got from Karen Bracken, and she's one of the very active members of Tennesseans Against Common Core, and it says, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. I agree 100% with that. Anyway, she is raising money to do ads informing people about Common Core. Remember, the other side, the Rhino establishment and their buddies at the Chamber of Commerce are running all these ads supporting Common Core. The Chamber of Commerce, you know, the same ones that support amnesty? They're pushing for Common Core, so that should tell you a little something. So just if you're interested in donating, because it's $18 per spot on the 101.3 radio station, I think that's in Cleveland, Tennessee, during the 3 hours of the Glenn Beck Show. And then it's $130 per spot during the Michael DelGiorno Show in Nashville. So as long as money keeps coming in, she's able to run these spots. If you're interested, you can send a donation to William Bracken at 231 Bob White Drive in Ocoee, Tennessee, 37361. If nothing else, just get on the Tennesseans Against Common Core website or contact Karen Bracken at karen.bracken@reagan.com. All right. They also have a postcard campaign that she can tell you about if you want to send postcards directly to the governor, who seems to be a big supporter of Common Core. All right, without any further delay, we're going to go to our first guest. It's Kathy Henners. She's our, like I say, one of the resident experts on the Islamist threat here in Tennessee. And if you'll bear with me tonight, for whatever reason, there seems to be a delay in my computer tonight when I click on some of these buttons. Hopefully I won't lose you. All right. Okay, and I'm having some trouble getting her mic to open up. Hopefully it will here in just a second. Come on, let's go. Turn a little faster, turn a little faster. Turn blue for me. All right, we're having some trouble there, and I apologize. You know, that is the downside to internet radio. Sometimes you have these problems. But hopefully she'll be with us here in just a second. And there is a script issue. Kathy, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Dave.
Great, great. Hey, appreciate you being with us tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's nice to be back on.
It's good to have you. It was great to listen to you on your show. It's great to have you back on this show.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I want to just say that you tired me out, like, right before we even started. With all the stuff that you have going on, it's like, whoa. But, yeah, it was nice having my own show. I hope at some point to, you know, get back on. But right now, just time is not a management, you know, it's a management issue for me. But it's great to be back on your show.
Well, it's great to have you. So what's new? What else has been going on in Tennessee in terms of the Islamist threat?
It's been fairly busy. They're keeping us busy watching, you know, what they're doing and where they are. I think one of the bigger things that just happened was the passing of the bill that allows them to have a cemetery in the Murfreesboro Mosque. That was something that the city of Murfreesboro and obviously the opponents of it had been fighting to keep the burial and the cemetery out of Murfreesboro for several reasons. But it did pass, and so I believe as of last month they had a working cemetery, which a lot of people feel that there are some concerns for that, and I think it rightfully so, because the way they bury the bodies is not really conducive to the way, you know, we're used to burying bodies. And they're not buried in any particular type of vault. They go directly in the ground. So there were some concerns as to, you know, possibly any contamination, you know, any bodily fluids or things like that, because they're also not embalmed. But they've done studies, they've done soil tests and, you know, whatever, and they said that they felt that it was okay for it to go through, and it did.
It was the
zoning commission in Murfreesboro that finally ended up saying that it was okay. They had some experts that said that the soil would not be at any greater risk whether they embalmed them, because then you have embalming fluids, or you didn't embalm them, you know, embalm them. So, you know, once again, they did win, but there are still questions as to whether or not there are some, like, general city ordinances that have been kind of set aside, you know, for them. And that was the whole contention with the mosque being built to begin with. A lot of people felt that there was, you know, a lot of rules that were set aside specifically for the Muslims. You know, everybody else has rules to abide by, and they necessarily didn't have to. So that's been kind of a real thing of contention going on in Murfreesboro. But they really are they're fast-forwarding and, you know, seeing their activities from their interfaith forums to the immigrant reform issue right now is very big amongst a few of our noted Islamists in the Nashville area. They are really picking up on the immigration reform, and that makes sense. You know, one of the stages that I think we'll probably talk about in a few minutes is to bring more and more immigrants into a non-Muslim country. And, you know, they're talking about bringing in, at this point, it looks like 30,000 Syrians, you know. And, yeah, so according to their, you know, the American for Legal Immigration website, that's the number that they're looking at bringing in. And, of course, this past, I think it was just last month, they lessened the criteria for coming into the country as far as, you know, the aliens go. And so it's kind of allowed a little bit of a leeway. And it was February 6th, actually. They loosened the immigrant standards. So now we're looking
at terrorist acts, correct?
Yeah. Well, as long as they're considered insignificant material support to armed groups. So, you know, the Syrian rebels, who, you know, probably a vast majority of that 30,000 may be, they're, you know, they're bringing them in, considering them not to be, you know, a risk to our country. But I, you know, again, when you start bringing in, you start lessening the standards for who's coming into the country, there's a big, big issue with who these people actually are. The Somalis that are coming into the country, there's not always a way to find out really who they are. They don't.
You mean
exactly
the witch doctors
have...
don't update their records?
There's not like a filing system there, you know. The witch doctors, yeah, pretty much. You know, they don't have the standard, you know, paperwork system that we have, obviously. So, you know, a lot of times even their dates of birth, especially women, won't know their date of birth. So how do you bring someone in when we can't even verify, you know, who they are? But they are bringing them in. So I guess,
you know, our government doesn't care about our safety. They don't care about our Constitution. But we do care about the Constitution, and we certainly care about our security. But in reference to the Constitution, you know, it should come to no surprise that our Constitution, the basis of our nation and the central core of our values, is under attack. It sometimes seems that everybody and his brother is trying to figure out an end run around the articles and amendments of the greatest governing document of all time. And if you're tired of leftists and unfriendly political forces telling America that our Constitution is a mere footnote, be advised that a lot of real Americans like you and me are going to come together at the Defend the Constitution rally in Waynesboro, Tennessee, just an hour southwest of Nashville, on the weekend of April 26th. Great speakers like Scotty Nell Hughes, Karen Vaughn, and Joe Carr will be on hand, just to name a few. Great music, great food, and great times will be had by all. Go to defendtheconstitutionrally.com to learn more about this great event and hope to see you there. You're listening to Inside Tennessee and Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and I'm talking with Kathy Henners. She is one of the Tennessee's resident experts on the Islamist threat, and she has a blog called The Daily Roll Call. She used to do a show called Daily Roll Call, and hopefully we'll do it again in the near future. We were talking about, you know, now they're going to bring the Syrians over. Now, Syria especially, how do you determine a friendly Syrian? I mean, of all places, Syria has been, even their government was by no means an ally, but they've been our enemy for years for all practical purposes. And so how do you determine with all these different groups, how do you make a determination? Have they laid out what criteria they're going to look at to determine who gets to come here, other than to say, well, if you've only done a few terroristic acts, we'll let you in.
Yeah, no, I don't know what their actual criteria is going to be, but I think that it's interesting because at one point, you know, we were funding the rebels, and then it turned out that a faction of them were from Al-Qaeda. So I don't know that we know who exactly the rebels are. I mean, we had the same problem in Libya when we were when Gaddafi was killed. There was not really a defined, you know, set of who is who, and I feel it's probably the same way in Syria. We don't know. I mean, I think they change sides as much as they change names, so there's not really a way to tell. And then there's always the possibility the name changes. You know, when and I often talk about this to law enforcement, the long string of names that a lot of Middle Easterners have and a lot of Muslims have, there is nothing to changing that name. They'll drop a name or they'll add a name, and proof of that is one of the imams from the Islamic Center of Nashville. He was always known as Muhammad Ahmed, and now we're finding he's using the name Muhammad al-Sharif. Well, is that, you know, necessarily a fraudulent name? No, it probably fit into the long string of names. The al-Sharif probably was in there amongst the Muhammad Ahmed, but we don't have a way to keep track of who is who and to determine their names. It's brutal to try to run, you know, a Middle Eastern name. It's very, very difficult with all the, like Abu, A-B-U, in front of a name is considered to be a nickname. It is not a structure of the naming convention, you know, where bin means son of. So there's a lot of things that are intertwined with their name that don't mean anything. So it's very hard to determine. And for them to say, you know, we're going to bring 30,000 Syrians into the country, this fits the agenda, no doubt. This certainly fits the agenda of how they're going to eventually take over. But certainly there is no safe way to say who's who, and that goes for any of the immigrants that are coming in from that part of the world. And then we talk about the Somalis that are coming in. They're even worse because they don't probably even know half the time of who they are. Their paperwork is, there's no structure to keep paperwork on who's who. So we could have been, you know, allowing terrorists, and I'm sure we have, al-Shabaab terrorists from Somalia coming in. And we're not lessening up on that at all. And we have someone, a young woman by the name of Dross Koke, that is in Nashville, that is an activist on behalf of the immigration. She herself was immigrated here. She's a Kurd. And, you know, there's no sense of right or wrong. It's just stop deporting these poor people. And, we looked at the Somali community, and we found that the elders in particular did not want to be here. And throughout the country, you know, people, mental health people were contacting me saying, we see such a form of depression. They don't want to be here. This is
we can accommodate that, you know. I mean, we have planes. They go to Somalia, too. Hey, I've got to take a quick break.
Sure.
And we'll finish when we come back. And then, actually, when we come back, we got a couple callers on the line. So don't go away. We'll be right back. You're listening to Inside Tennessee, Conservative Nation Media. Okay, eventually we will go away. I'm waiting for this thing to click.
I'll be real quiet.
We have a delayed reaction. Okay, let's try it again here. Okay, Wes, well, we're going to skip this 50-minute break. We'll try it again at the bottom of the hour. Apologize for that. Now, what I'm going to attempt to do is, when the little circle stops turning here, I'm going to attempt to take a call. We've got a couple callers on the line here. So as soon as this thing stops, man, this is really annoying. I'm not sure what the problem is, other than it's Internet.
I remember it well, Dave.
It's got its downside.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, whenever this stops, I will try and take up one of these calls. But you were talking about the Somalia, so I'll just go back to you and let you continue on, and we'll adjust from there.
Yeah, what we were finding, and you know, part of what I do is I instruct law enforcement across the country, and when we would start talking about the Somalis, they always had the same issues, and we were just finding that they, you know, as a whole, they do not wish to assimilate whatsoever. So that and then...
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
I always like that song.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia.
Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
Whether you're on active duty.
Okay. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee and Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176. And, yes, once again, we have technical difficulties, but we're going to get through this. We're talking to Kathy Henners. She's one of the experts on the Islamist threat in Tennessee. And, Kathy, I know this is kind of a gamble, but I'm going to attempt to see if we can get one of our callers through and see if they have a question or a comment. So let's see how this goes.
Okay. Got to be me, Dave.
No, it's not. It's it's just the nature of the beast, I guess. All right, little circle's turning. Let's see what it does here. Anyway, when it, if it pops red, I'll, you know, if the mic comes hot, I'll interrupt you and we'll get a question. So just keep talking about the Somalis and we'll take it from there.
All right. Well, one of the big things that we had found when I was in Amarillo, there had been a call to a residence of a Somalian, and there was a 22-year-old that had died. And so obviously, you know, in our world, when you have a young man die, you need to find out why. Well, it turned into a huge melee because they didn't want to release the body to the police or to the coroner. You know, stating that they didn't believe in our law, they had to bury the body, whatever. So after a near riot, they did take the body, they completed an autopsy, and they found that he died of a new strain of tuberculosis. So we know that they're bringing in diseases that we are not privy to at this point, that we don't have a clue, really, what's happening. So that between tuberculosis and hepatitis, you know, they're just bringing in new diseases into our country, introducing it into our country. And then I think one of the most interesting things we found is that because they don't assimilate, they're not used to, you know, toilets that flush. But I guess I can understand that, though, because, you know, if you imagine sitting on a hole and all of a sudden it flushes, their thing is they were going to go down that. So what we found that they would do is they would dig a big hole in their backyard. They would use that as the toilet, and then later in the day they would cook on it. So, you know, there's a health issue there. But as far as I know, even the health department isn't, you know, going out seeing what these people are doing.
Disgusting
and
dangerous.
And to a point, I do get it. Huh?
Yeah. Disgusting and dangerous. All right, we've got a caller on the line here.
Okay.
Caller, you have a question or a comment? Hello? 423, you have a question or a comment?
Somebody's there.
Hello? Man, I went to a lot of trouble to get you on the line here. Do you have a question or a comment, caller? Okay, guess not. All right. Well, let's see about Kurt here. All right, this is not working very well, so, you know, if we'll just continue talking, and then I'll try a break here in another 6 minutes. We'll see how that goes. All right, so they come in here with health problems. They come in here, and they're not assimilating. I mean, you know, digging a hole in the backyard and using it for the, you know, using that as your toilet, then cooking on it. And then this stuff is going on in a neighborhood, right?
Yeah, yes, it is. And we're also finding, you know, that a lot of these workers were the same workers that were working for Tyson Chicken. So, you know, Tyson Chicken, of course, you know, the big plant in Shelbyville, which now I hear has not as many working. So it looks like a lot of them are going to different places throughout the state. But from what I understand, the Somalis aren't as great in number as they were at one time. But certainly Tyson Chicken was where they, you know, they had the federal grant, so they were working for Tyson Chicken. So my thing is, well, I would never eat Tyson Chicken after hearing some of these stories. But anyway,
I'll
we know
on
that
the
immigration
grill.
Is. Oh man, yeah, really. You know, they kind of do it all in one step, I guess. But you know, that goes along with the different stages. I mean, we've talked about what the different stages are, and the mass you know, migration into this country of immigrants, and so many of them, and I'm not saying all, but so many of them are from Islamic countries. So we're just bringing in mass amounts of Muslims, and, you know, then hence you've got our infiltration problem. And we certainly see that when you start looking at the four stages of Islamic indoctrination and infiltration, we're well into, I would say, well, probably stage three out of four. And a lot of people have said to me, you know, how far behind are we from the UK? And some people say years behind the UK. I don't agree with that. I think we are not maybe a year away from where they are. We saw a beheading, you know, right there on a city street of a Muslim soldier. And that is just something that I know America is not ready for.
Of a British soldier.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. And, you know, we're not ready for that, but it's going to happen. We already had a beheading in New Jersey. It wasn't done in public, but it was done by two Muslims. And it was, I believe it was a Coptic Christian that they beheaded, and they found the head in the trunk. And those type stories go literally, you know, under the rug, and no one hears about them. But it's only a matter of time before some knucklehead decides to do it, and you know how everyone has a camera. So I think that that's only a matter of time. But when you look at the stages, you know, stage one is considered the infiltration, and you look at that, and we are – everything that they list is we've got. You know, they talk about the Muslim birth rate in the host country, which Somalis generally have anywhere from 3 to 8 children. And yes, we are paying for that. If they're here, we obviously are paying for that. But, you know, 3 to 8 children. Most Americans now are having, you know, 1 to 2 children. Well, most Americans are having one that know what they can afford are having 1 to 2 children. But so they're already well ahead of us as far as the birth rate. The calls to criminalize what they call Islamophobia as a hate crime. We've talked about it before, the defamation of religion law that the Organization of Islamic Cooperation is working on at the UN. Threatened legal action for what they consider to be discrimination. Well, we know we have CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. Their lawsuits are off the charts, and they're suing for pretty much everything. If they're offended, they are suing.
Yeah, they're suing,
you
yeah.
And you're former military, so I'm sure your head is reeling from the latest where, you know, now they can wear the headscarves and beards and whatnot in the military. You know, I mean, that's...
You know, they're just going to, and they're going to draw out the most radicals by, you know, the most radical element by doing that. And, you know, I can just imagine when somebody says something, you know, or raises a question or a legitimate concern, of course, you're going to have the military hierarchy. They're going to turn on them. They're going to label them an Islamophobe and reeducate them or boot them, whatever the case might be. But, yeah, they're just slowly taking over. And, you know, when we say take over, a lot of people think, well, you know, there's only, you know, there's 300-some million Americans, and there's, what, a few million of Muslims in a country.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at, how many people are up there on the Department of Homeland Security Advisory Board, how many of them are in our government at the federal and state level? You don't have
mm-hmm.
to. I mean, the majority of Germans were not Nazis in World War II, but look what
mm-hmm.
they did. So when people think, when they say that we're overreacting because there's no way that that small number could take over, it really depends on where that small number is. And since most people just get along to go along, and since most people are sheep, you know, you don't have to have massive numbers to take over.
No,
you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution, where America always wins. All right, we're up against a hard break. I'm going to attempt to take it. Hopefully everything will work, and we will be back in just a couple of minutes. So here we go. Let's see if it works. Come on. All right, my screen went white. Not usually a good sign. Okay. Well, little ball is spinning. We'll be talking here in a second, and all of a sudden, it'll break into the commercial, I'm sure. But that's better than silence. Yeah, I don't know what the problem is. Something with the server tonight. Anyway, we will talk until the commercial starts, if it starts. If it doesn't start, oh, well, I tried. now, you know, I think I told you about this a little bit earlier today. I know you've heard about the incident out in California that actually happened last year where they hit a power station. Now, when I say they, we don't know that it was Islamist. I'll say that up front. I mean, that's my suspicion. Just my suspicion, but I mean, it was a major attack. There were, I think, about 100 rounds fired. And so now even people like Chuck Schumer, certainly no conservative, you know, they're calling for
I started going cold turkey. Well, at least when I'm in the car.
I know I shouldn't do it, but it's so hard to stop. That's why I hide it from myself, so I won't be tempted.
I used to do it all the time. I stopped by locking it in my glove compartment.
My friend used to do it way too much. Now I turn it off when we're in the car.
My solution is simple. I just don't do it.
There are lots of ways to stop yourself and others from texting and driving. How will you stop? Tell us at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Meadows, your host on Grit and Grace. Please join us every Tuesday night from 10 to 12 Eastern for an honest look at the top political and cultural issues that are affecting Americans today. That's Grit and Grace, for conservative analysis that is smart and entertaining. Tuesdays, 9 to 11 p.m. Central, 10 to 12 Eastern on conservativenationmedia.com.
I started going cold turkey. Oh, at least when I'm in the car.
I know I shouldn't do it, but it's so hard to stop. That's why I hide it from myself.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking with Kathy Henners about the Islamist threat here in Tennessee. And, Kathy, we've kind of jumped around here a little bit. We've had some problems, some technical problems. But I want to get back on track here a little bit. I do want to finish up what I was talking about right before the break. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there was a power station hit out in California. It's finally, even though it happened sometime last year, it's finally starting to get a little bit of attention at the federal level, and they're calling for more security for our grid system. And, you know, here in Tennessee, we have a compound that's controlled by, or that's owned by, I guess you'd say, the Muslims of America. They're also known as Jamaat al-Fukra, which was at one time recognized as a terrorist organization in this country. They did kill some people back in, I believe, the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. I think they came off the list of an active terrorist organization within the country around 2000, 2001. However, the founder, a guy named Sheikh Jalani, is who Daniel Pearl was en route to see when he was captured and beheaded. And if you've seen, I'm sure you've seen some of the training films for law enforcement that talks about this organization. And they are a terrorist organization. There's no two ways about it, regardless of how our government labels them. And keep in mind who is now controlling our government, especially on that issue. But they have a compound here in Stewart County, Tennessee. And that compound, I mean, where they're located at should concern everybody. They're not that far from Fort Campbell. They're not that far from Lake Barkley and Land Between the Lakes. You've got a major water supply there. And they're not far from the TVA. Matter of fact, the power lines go right by the property. Now, obviously, while they're there, they're not going to do anything while they're there. But, you know, there's 30-some compounds all across the country. So at some point in time, whenever that time is, I'm sure all those different compounds, all the people in those compounds have some sort of pre-planned mission. And considering the proximity that they of their facility there to power lines and to water sources and to the TVA, I mean, I think that's something everybody should be concerned about. So, you know, those threats are not just out in California. They're not just up in New York. They're right here in Tennessee. And I just kind of wanted to put that out a little bit, but wanted to I'll turn it back to you now, and you can catch us back up on where we are in terms of the infiltration stages.
Well, and I'm glad that you're talking about that, because I know that a few years ago, I think it was Channel 5 sent a news crew out there because, you know, somebody said that was there. And what really disturbed me, you know, was they come back almost with this, you know, this attitude like a joke, like, oh, yeah, you know, the boogeymen are living out in Dover. Well, when in fact, if they did any research at all, they would learn who this group is, and yes, they are a very dangerous group. You're right, they have not been active as far as killing people since the 80s, so I guess that means they're not terrorists anymore. So we go ahead and we take them off of the, you know, the list. But in fact, what's happening within those compounds, we know that they're training for, you know, whatever warfare they feel. I'm very familiar with the one in New York, which is Islamberg, and it certainly is. And they are placed in areas that are of interest that could hurt, you know, like you said, the TVA. The one in New York is placed along the what's called the Cannondale Reservoir, which is New York City's main drinking water supply. You know, so that's where it comes from, the Cannondale Reservoir. And this compound sits right on that. So they pick areas. The one, I think you said the one here is 22 acres. The one in New York is 76, which is it's also the headquarters up there. I've been there three times. I've never gotten welcomed very well in those three times that I was there. But I'm sure it's the same thing in Dover. There's 36. We knew as of a couple years ago there was 36 training compounds. I'm willing to bet there's probably a few more, but that's their MO. They buy in the middle of nowhere. You know, they're surrounded by nothing, but they're close enough to, you know, some type of infrastructure that can cause a great deal of harm. And, you know, when you talk about the electrical grid that was put in, you know, in danger out in California, we haven't heard about that for a year, and that was a major, major deal. And you've got the former Federal Energy Regulatory Commissioner saying that he feels it was a terrorist attack because 17 of the transformers were surgically knocked out with bullets, and there were only certain components that they did, and it would have affected. There are actually three different systems which would have affected several different areas of the United States. So it wasn't just California it would have affected, but you're talking millions. So, you know, all of a sudden this leaked out when, in fact, you know, I think we certainly had a right to know a year ago in April that this happened. And was it a terrorist attack? I think it's got it written all over. Why else would, you know, they do this to knock out the grid? But it could have been a test run, and luckily they were able to divert the power back through, I think it was San Francisco's power grid, so they really didn't experience anything. But that's coming, and they know that they can do it. And like you say, you have a training compound right on the ground. They're also very close to Fort Campbell. And you start thinking about, well, why would they do that? Why, you know, why is this happening? But I got to tell you, I'm really starting to lose patience with people that look at you like you've grown another head because you say the Muslim Brotherhood is here in this country. We've got, you know, Jamaat al-Fukra in Dover. You know, you can only keep your head in the sand for so long, and it's really becoming sickening that people aren't looking at this as a serious, serious issue. If these guys were walking around downtown Nashville and they had a gun on and they were coming in with tanks, we'd be at war. But because they have suits on and they're coming from within, no one seems to take notice of that. And you pointed out earlier, I can name you five right off the top of my head that are in the White House, in Homeland Security. And, you know, you kind of think, why are they in Homeland Security? They're the ones making the Homeland Security policy. And, you know, Eric Holder, he's not a Muslim, I don't believe, but he is upholding anything that they choose to do, and any lawsuits that come from someone like, you know, you and I are being dismissed. They're not honoring any type of lawsuit. So we can't seem to gain traction with anything that we're doing. But yet they're making the policies. They're setting the laws. And, you know, what is the old saying? The fox is in the hen house or something. And I truly believe, or the fox is guarding the hen house or something. I'm not really good at
fox is guarding.
You know, things,
and this would be the equivalent of, this would be the equivalent of in World War II having Nazis in the White House cabinet advising us how to fight the war. That's the equivalent of it.
You talk about a nation of, sheep being led by a wolf. And, if we're going to continue to be sheep, we're going to be slaughtered. And I think that's, people look and they say, oh, go on. And that's really starting to get to me, because I think that it's time. They are moving very quickly. They are, implementing their agenda very quickly. And, when you talk about the stages, when I said there's four stages, and I feel that, there's parts of stage three that are in progress, it's time to get your head out of where the sun doesn't shine and look and understand what we're saying. I've said to people, I was just a cop. I have no agenda. I have no agenda. I'm not a politician. I'm just telling you what we know. And it's getting to the point where, you get angry with people for not listening or not understanding. And, we talked about the immigrants coming in, and we have these interfaith forums. Family of Abraham is one of the bigger ones in this state. Yeah. And these people they're crazy. We give them proof. We show them things. And I don't know what it takes, Dave. They can see something in black and white, and they're like, oh, you must have, you must have changed it, or you did something to it. And I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take, if it's another 9/11. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take to wake people up.
Let's hope not, but it's not looking good. They are not catching on. They're like you say, there's still so many that are sheep. Anyway, I've got to read this real quick, but ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing, and we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design. Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to ConservativeNationMedia.com inside Tennessee. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Be advised, we are having some technical difficulties tonight. So I do have Kurt in the queue. Kurt, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Dave.
You got any questions or comments?
I want to throw this in the mix here. I've been thinking, I'm trying to think. Let me start that phrase over. I've been trying to think differently for quite some time now. And I wonder if we, and that's a collective, of course, we, all of us who are in this movement and are trying to affect the situation, are we missing the boat thinking, logically? Here's what I mean. I hear the question nearly every day by someone, when they're referring to what's going on in Washington and maybe sometimes in Nashville, don't they know what this is going to cause? Well, the answer to that is yes, they know what it's going to cause. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get these people to think logically, and they're not going to. Is there perhaps something that we're missing, a way to think outside the box, to get abnormal on them, to find a new tool, a new way to attack this? And I'm thinking of one thing in particular. I don't know if you want to bring it out on this show or not, but the email that you posted Bill Warner on that new concept. You know what I'm speaking of, right?
Voice for the voiceless. Yes,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Yes.
And you know, I meant to actually talk about that a little bit, and we can touch on it
mm-hmm.
some, but I didn't really lay out anything out, and I know Kathy's familiar
that's
with
okay.
it. That's
okay. I
one
mean,
as well.
I just think it's, I think it's an area of something different, a new way to attack this. We have to
mm-hmm.
get illogical against their insanity. That's how, I don't know if that makes sense to you, but
mm-hmm.
it does to me, and I'm trying to find an answer.
And I don't think it's so much illogical as it's the people respond more to emotional stimulus than they do facts. You know, they don't want to hear a bunch of
yes.
facts and figures. They and what does the left do? The left uses emotion. Now, a lot of times
right.
they will distort facts and then get people's emotions all worked up to get what they want. But the thing is, we don't have to lie on our side. But yes, Voice for the Voiceless. You can find out. I think it's voiceforthevoiceless.com. In fact, and you can hear a video by Dr. Bill Warner, and there's brochures that talks about. Basically, it talks about the victims of Islam. Is essentially what it does, and it lays out. You know, Christians are not the only ones being persecuted, but they're certainly one of the main groups worldwide who are being persecuted. And this points out that at all these different, Kathy mentioned a little while ago, these interfaith meetings they have, and, you know, wherever there's a venue to be a voice for the voiceless, and I really can't, without having all the material in front of me, I can't, elaborate a whole lot more. Kathy, is there anything else you'd like to say about that?
Well, first of all, hello, Kurt, and it does take Kurt to always think of something outside the box, I will say that. But I do agree with him to a point, but I think for me what our biggest mistake was, and of course I guess this is irrelevant because it's said and done, but thinking it's a religion was our biggest mistake, or acknowledging that it's a religion was our biggest mistake. You know, when you look at what a mosque is and what, you know, when you go back in time and what the mosques are and whatever, they are places of not so much worship, but they are places of business. You know, when they talk about special work, they mean military work. So that,
yeah.
to me, is our biggest mistake. And if any of us can ever prove that it isn't just a religion, and believe me, I would be the one to gladly work on that, it's going to take forever and a day to do that. But I agree with what Kurt says and what you said as far as the emotional. People want to hear and feel emotions. And right now, the Muslims are very good at being victims. Right now they're talking about how they're being slaughtered in the Central African Republic, and that's all I'm reading about right now is that, you know, that's all they're talking about. Forget the Christians that have been slaughtered everywhere. It's now the Muslims in Central African Republic. And we're talking probably, hundreds of Muslims being killed, and that's, as far as humanity, of course, that's a terrible toll. But they're turning this around, and they're very good at turning this around. So, you know, the Christians, well, yeah, you're getting killed, but, man, we're really getting killed, and we've been oppressed for so much longer than you white people have. And this is what, and even though they're white, we're having a debate right now if they're brown, but regardless, the story is getting turned and twisted, and they're very good at doing this because right now they are the victim. And they enjoy playing the victim. They still talk about how 9/11, even though we lost 3,000 people, they were the victim because now they've been discriminated against for all these years. I don't see it. I don't see the discrimination. I don't see where they're a victim. But, you know, as you said, the left is very good at crying. You can see Nancy Pelosi crying over, oh, those poor Muslim people. There's nothing poor about them. They're very methodical. They're very intelligent, and they think out what they're going to do. And there are, you know, the 20-year plan, the strategical for North America, their manifesto. They're a very patient people, and they've said this is what they're going to do, and they're doing it brilliantly. But part of being a victim is part of how they're doing it. So, you know, the voice for the voiceless is something that I think is a great idea, because then you're not talking about any religion. The playing field is now level. You're talking about human beings being slaughtered. And I guess that's probably the way to go. but I'm not so convinced that it won't get twisted to go back on the Muslims as well. So, you know, we're up against a culture that none of us are familiar with as far as how they're doing this and why they're doing this. You know, but until people realize that the global caliphate is the be-all, end-all for the Muslims, you know, people just don't get it. And I don't know.
Yeah, and that's what they're working towards, regardless of whether they're able to accomplish it. That's what they're working towards. You know, Hitler tried to take over the world, or a good chunk of it, and he didn't accomplish it, but look at all the destruction he brought. So it's not a question of whether they can physically take over our country or whether they can physically set up a global caliphate. They want to, they believe they can, and they're doing everything that they can. So in the process, a lot of people are getting killed because of it. We've got about 10 minutes until our hour's up, and I'm going to try to see if I've got this other guy's mic lit now. Hopefully he can hear me. 423, do you have a question or a comment? Caller, do you have a question or a comment? 423 area code? Okay, I guess not. All right. We got about 10 minutes. It's probably that, you know what, it's a 423 area code. I think that's East Tennessee. I wonder if it's that that phony Tea Partier, Will Cooley, listening in on us. You know, the pro-Islamist guy from one of the East Tennessee Tea Parties there.
Yeah, who says he's a Tea Partier, and, you know, it's funny because he's got some interesting ideas. He does, you know, believe in certain things that I actually look at and go, oh my God, this scares me, because I do agree with him on some things, like when you talk about the NSA and stuff. But he's very good at, you know, concealing himself and going to Tea Party meetings and twisting it. And it wouldn't surprise me, you know, that he doesn't listen to any of these shows and try to call in. But maybe that's why he's being stifled, because nobody wants to hear him. But, yeah, Hillbilly Willie is alive and well in East Tennessee. I think he's down in, like, Marysville or something. And but, yeah, if he's listening, yes, you know, try keep calling in there, Willie, because we got lots to talk about. But you're right. He does like to pretend he's a Tea Partier as well. But he believes in Sharia law. So, you know, there's no Tea Party about that, you know, at all. But, you know, going back to what you're saying, when you have an Islamist that is the top law enforcement official in the country, such as Eric Holder, and I'm not saying he's a Muslim, but he's in, you know, he supports them, when they are in the White House. And, you know, as you start to see the politicians, you know, there's one running in Tullahoma this year, and that's the idea. The mayor of Atlanta is a Muslim. And as they start to take over these positions and start creating new laws, what do? You know, how do you react to that? But I guess my question has been to those listening is, what is your line? When do you say, you know, enough is enough? And what do you do about it? You know, how what's your plan? You know, but when do you start saying, well, these people can't all be wrong. It has nothing to do with the religion. I could care less about how they pray. It's their agenda that I'm concerned about, as everyone should be. And we talk about Common Core. And Common Core is a prime example. There is that Islamic connection to it. That is not the sole thing about behind Common Core, but it's a very, to me, it's a very big part. And, you know, they're taking our kids. And like you said, you know, the communists, that was what they did. They controlled the children. And when you start hearing them talk about pre-K.
Oh, I know.
I don't
they
know how
want
much
younger
you can possibly. Yeah, and, you know, I guess that's for the mind control, you know, but it just doesn't end, and that's the way it's supposed to be in their world, is that everywhere we turn, we're being faced with this agenda and this ideology, and unless you get it, you will succumb to it, and I guess that's what people aren't getting. And the interfaith forums and, you know, all the other things that they're doing, immigration, it's all part and parcel. You know, it's all part of the big picture. And we need people to understand and to start exposing and to start saying, no, We don't want this in our schools. And for a school system the size of Nashville and to be allowing a lot of the things that they're allowing to happen in their schools, I would think every parent that was normal would be saying, no, we don't want our kids to learn about this.
The problem is most of the parents probably don't know. That's my guess, is there's probably a lot of uninvolved or a lot of parents that just, you know, and I'm not as involved with my school system as I should be or need to be, but I do have some idea of what's going on there. But I think, generally speaking, you know, the parents are not involved, and they just trust that, well, you know, especially if they're from there. You know, if their kids are, you know, and a lot of times that's the case, not always, but their kids are going to the same school they went to. And they probably know some of the teachers. And they just, oh, yeah, okay, it's good. It's got a few problems here and there, but all not. You know, they're just trusting. They're sheep. They're essentially sheep.
Yeah.
And you know, it's always, well, yeah, that happens somewhere else, but it doesn't happen here. Well, no, it's here, it's there, it's everywhere. But, you know, as far as what we can do, I mean, all we can do is continue to try to educate people about it. But, you know, I look at it like this. In terms of turning our country around on this issue, and you pick an issue, I've written off the federal government. The federal government is not salvageable. I don't care if the GOP takes the House. I mean, keeps the House in 14 and picks up seats, and saves the Senate and takes the Senate back. I don't think that's going to get it. If we take it in 2016, I don't think that's going to get it, because we've seen what they are, and there's not enough of them that really care about doing the right thing. So that's not going to do it. What it's going to take is it's going to take the states. And that is in Tennessee with our governor and with a lot of the elite in our state. That is a problem in itself. But what it's going to take is the average citizen holding their state elected representatives and senators and governor responsible, because it's obvious that the federal government's a lost cause. It will not be reformed. It will not reform itself. It will take the states forcing it to reform. So that means it's going to take us as citizens. You know, here's how I see it. Guess what? State representative, I don't want to hear this crap about, well, that's D.C., there's nothing like. No, but you took two oaths. You have an oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution. So I think we hold them accountable. Where D.C. fails, when D.C. doesn't follow the Constitution, it's their job to step in and make it right. And I know that's not easy to do, but I think that's the only way to make it happen. Anyway, we got about 2 minutes left, and I will leave it back to you, and I'll let you, leave you with a parting shot.
Well, I certainly hope that, you know, the knowledge is there. They can, you know, listen to your show. They can go to my website, dailyrollcall.com. There's the TennesseeForPoliticalJustice.com. There's PoliticalIslam.com. There's so much material for people to be able to latch on to one site, go to them all, whatever, and start researching. You know, it's up to you as an individual to Google something that we've said and to start researching on your own. You know, don't leave it to any one person to tell you what is happening. Go, you know, find out for yourself. And that's, the more you dig, the more you see and the more you understand. And I will tell you, though, that asking an imam is not the right thing to do, because you are not going to get an honest answer from them, unfortunately. So before we go, Dave, I just want to say, you talked about the Defend the Constitution rally when you first came on. And myself, Bill Warner, and I think Bobby Betray are also going to be speakers at that event down in Waynesboro. So, I'm really looking forward to a good-sized crowd, and that's coming up in April. So there's that, and a lot of stuff happening this spring. And I will be the moderator of the debate next Thursday down in Tullahoma on Common Core. I have been asked to be the moderator, so I will be in the middle with my mouth shut, I guess, which is going to be really hard to do.
Good luck with that.
I will be right there in the middle and be giving out the questions and making sure everybody stays on track. So it should be interesting. But
who's going to be at that event? The Common Core event.
I think Julie West is involved in it. There's a couple principals from the Tullahoma area that will be pro-Common Core. Then there's Julie, and I'm sorry I don't remember the other woman that will be there for as opponents to it. And so I'm really looking forward to that. I think it's going to draw a really good crowd. I think it's a great way to do it. And, you know, as long as I can keep my mouth shut, we'll be good to go.
Well, Kathy, I appreciate you coming on. I'm glad that you did not keep your mouth shut during this, and you gave us a lot of good information. I appreciate it and hope to have you back real soon.
All right, Dave. Thanks for the opportunity. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. All right, we are going to attempt. We're up against a hard break. I'm going to attempt to take it. We'll see how this works. We've been having some tech problems tonight, but here we go. You're listening Inside Tennessee and Conservative Nation Media. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, I guess it doesn't want to work, so you know what? We won't worry about it. Let me see if I can get my next guest up, which is John Harris. And just bear with me here. These are technical problems beyond my control. Frustrating for all of us. Come on. Okay. All right, as soon as I can get John to pull up, we'll go ahead and start. I'm not going to try the commercial. Hopefully it won't interrupt us. And right now I'm in limbo, just a little ball twirling around there, waiting for something to light up. Apologize for the delay. There's still some technical problems here. Hopefully we'll pop up in just a second and we'll have John with us. I do have some information about some bills, and these are some of the bills that we'll talk to John about once I'm able to pull him up online here. All right, now let's see if this will work. Let me go ahead.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Expected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by FeedThePig.org.
Well, I finally did it. I opened a 401k.
So you're giving up, just like that?
Giving up on what?
On getting an inheritance from a distant relative.
Don't you think if there were a billionaire in the family, we'd know about it by now?
Listen to me, we are one phone call away from riding horses on our own private polo ground. One call from christening yachts, having a butler, using summer as a verb.
How do you figure?
Look, everyone's got a rich uncle somewhere. It's statistics. So the best thing you can do is just prepare for the inevitable.
Right, which is why I thought maybe it would be smart to take control of my finances. You know, start using a budget, get out of debt, set some retirement goals.
Budgets? Debt? You watch your mouth. Retirement shouldn't be a goal for us. It should be a way of life.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance, and we're waiting for John Harris to join us. We're having some technical issues, as we've had all night. I see him in the queue, and I'm waiting for his mic to go hot, so hopefully he'll be with us here in just a second. One of the first things we're going to be talking about is, of course, fixes for the parking lot bills, Senate Bill 1701 and House Bill 1405, which is on the calendar for the 20th. And TFA has asked legislators to amend this bill to provide a more complete solution to the poorly written law that TAPA advised against passing in 2013 because of the numerous and serious problems. If the legislators are unwilling to amend the law on the House floor, the TFA is asking it to be sent back to the committee to be considered with a TFA-supported bill by Representative Mark Pody. All right, and I've got to get John pulled up here. And let me give him a call real quick and let him know that I can see him in the queue, but I guess can't get it to pop up yet. Here we go. Maybe this is it. No. All right, looks like it's going to pop up. Okay. This has got to pop up here in a second. All right, we will have John with us here in just a minute, I hope. I apologize for the problems tonight. And if I can't get this squared away here in a minute, we're probably going to have to end the show. Can't carry on like this. This is ridiculous. I'll probably at least go over some of the gun bills. If you bear with me here, I'm going to give John a call and let him know that I'm trying to pull him up in the queue. And hopefully he'll be patient and isn't in too big of a hurry. Hey, John, I see your number in the queue. I'm having trouble pulling you up. Just if you can bear with me just a couple minutes, I'll try to get you up, and if not, we'll just – it's internet radio is all I know to tell you. Give me a couple more minutes here, and I'll try to get you pulled up. I can see your number, but I'm having trouble with my system, and I do apologize. Whichever one I can get to pull up. Yeah, and okay. Well, I'm just waiting to see which one pops up. If it doesn't do it here in a minute, I'll just let you go, and I'll have to try to get you back again. I don't know what the problem is. I will at least read off the bills that you guys are concerned about. Okay. All right. We'll try that. All right. Thanks. All right, he's going to try to call in on another number here while we're waiting. I'll just at least cover these bills just in case we don't get him on. Okay. And this bill, Tuesday, the 18th, 3 o'clock, in Legislative Plaza, Room 31, the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee. This is House Bill 1883. And changes regarding possession and use of certain switchblade knives. Makes lawful the sale, transfer, ownership, and possession or transportation of switchblade knives and knives with a blade length of in excess of 4 inches. And that's on the 18th. That's House Bill 1883 by Vance Dennis. And let's see. Well, that's the bulk of them. I'll let him talk more if I get him on. If not, we'll have to reschedule this. Kurt, do you still have me? Can you still hear me?
I hear you, Dave.
Okay. Not having any luck pulling anybody else up. Trouble on the air, you got it. That's right. Okay. Okay, I'm having a few restore sessions. Here we go. Come on. Restore sessions. John, can you hear me?
I'm here.
Okay, great. All right, sorry about that. I appreciate your patience. We've got John Harris, president of the Tennessee Firearm Association, on the line with us. And, John, we'll go ahead and I know the parking lot bill, the fix for the parking lot bill is, I guess, the biggest thing on TFA's agenda for now.
It's probably the only thing that's attainable right now.
Okay. And while I was waiting for you, I did talk a little bit about that, that basically if it's on the calendar for the 20th, Senate Bill 1701 and House Bill 1405, and if the legislators are not willing to amend it on the floor, you're asking it to be sent back to committee. Correct? John? Hello?
Hey, Dave.
Yeah. Okay.
Hold on.
All right.
Is that better?
Yep, got you now.
Okay. Yeah, it picked up on the home line instead of the cell phone, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. If we can't get a floor amendment on it, we want to either send both bills back to committee or just frankly kill them this year.
Okay, and that's because if they don't offer the protection for the employees, that you know, basically protection to ensure that they're not going to get fired, nothing else is worth the trouble. Is that pretty much sum it up?
Well, that's the biggest part of it, because there's this recurrent problem, and you know, I've been doing this with the legislature for almost 20 years now. And it's a problem of incrementalism that particularly infects the Republicans. And what they'll do is they'll pass a very small movement in the right direction, like the bills that they're trying to push through this year, and then basically take the position of, well, let's just wait a few years and see how that works before we go in and do anything else. And that's why it took 14 years, for example, to finally get the alcohol statute repealed in this state so that we could carry into markets and restaurants. I mean, in 14 years is just a ridiculous amount of time, particularly when the legislation addresses and concerns fundamental constitutional rights.
And, you know, that's the other thing. You mentioned they want to do everything incremental. And I know that when it comes to pretty much any of our freedoms that we've lost, I understand we didn't necessarily lose them all overnight. But, you know, a lot of stuff we did, you know, a lot of things were pretty fast. You know, it was a court decision, Supreme Court decision. And it never, the Democrats don't seem to go as incremental as the GOP does. And I'm like,
yeah, well,
you know,
even our GOP is largely at fault for adopting Common Core with Race to the Top money, and they did that in a twinkle of an eye. But yet when you talk about, you know, either saving citizens' lives or fundamental constitutional rights, they act with a great deal of pause, particularly if big business opposes it.
Yeah, yeah. You think it now, you've been doing this for a while. Has it gotten worse under Haslam? And I think I know the answer, but I'll go ahead and ask the question anyway.
Oh,
in terms of the
influence
of business?
Haslam and Ramsey and Harwell, I think, are first and foremost beholden to the concepts of big business money and political correctness. They are guided as a priority very little by constitutional or other core principles.
Well, let me ask you, on the GOP side, and I don't think there's very many of them, but who can we rely on in the House or in the Senate to consistently do the right thing based on principle, based on the Constitution?
Well, you know, that's a tough question. One of my constant supporters that I find will even go against leadership, and that's a key element there, on the Senate side in particular, is Senator Mae Beavers. Now, she's not the only one, but she's one of the most outspoken and most independent that is generally unswayed by pressure from Ramsey or Haslam. But there are a few others. I mean, Senator Campfield will stand down against them. We've seen a few instances where Senator Green has taken a step away from leadership and tried to do the right thing, but that's not always a predictable move on the Senate side.
Right.
And then on the House side, you know, there's Judd Matheny was one that we oftentimes think of in that category of resisting leadership, and I think his willingness to do that is why he's no longer Speaker pro tem. He's been woodshedded pretty hard by Harwell for, you know, announcing that he might run against her as Speaker. And then you've got Lieutenant Colonel Rogers, who I think is willing to do that, but she has just been so put upon by leadership that there's a hesitation there. And there are quite a few others that I see some promise on the House side. Terry Lynn Weaver, for example. Sheila Butt is a good one that we often look to. Mark Pody is, I think, one of the rising stars, although he's been there for a while. He's getting more and more independence behind him, particularly as his constituents encourage him. Joe Carr is showing some unusual movement, particularly as he's trying to leave the House and run for U.S. Senate. So there's certainly some senators out there and House members out there that have that independence, but the problem is it's almost like the old Star Wars movie where they have to keep their identity below the radar as to how conservative they really are for fear that leadership will focus too much attention on them.
So it's safe to say that this supermajority ain't so super, huh?
Oh, no. I think supermajority in Tennessee is a travesty. And one reason is I think it's really diluted the concept of sunshine on government, that we no longer really see the debates on the merits on the floors of the committees of the House or the Senate, and that instead all we're seeing is the choreographed show put on by leadership based upon decisions that they've made in their closed caucus meetings.
Is that now? I did read an article yesterday or today in reference to the relationship between the legislators, or at least some of the legislators, and Haslam, that, you know, maybe they're becoming a little more willing to buck him. Are you think you're seeing some more of that at least?
You know, I think it's an election year, and it's sort of like Democrats and Obama. they're sensing that there's a whole lot of people in the state not real happy with Haslam. Not much they can do about it because, you know, the deadline to qualify to run against him is in April, and nobody's even floating that balloon out there, so they're going to have to deal with him. But they don't necessarily want him campaigning locally in their races. So, yeah, I've seen some indicators of separation from Haslam, but I don't know how much of that is just election year show versus genuine distancing.
Ah. Okay. Well, now, all right, what do you think the odds are that we're going to get the parking lot bill fixed this year?
Well, the Senate sponsor is Beavers, and I've had House members openly tell me, and more than one, that they have been essentially instructed that any legislation, particularly firearms legislation, carried by Senator Beavers, will never see the floor in the Senate, which means unless some other senator comes on and carries her legislation, that the bills that we're primarily interested in are dead. And I don't know if that's retaliation against gun owners or if it's retaliation by Ramsey against Beavers. To me, it really doesn't matter which it is, because one is retaliation against citizens and the other is effectively disenfranchising an entire Senate district.
Yeah.
But I'm not optimistic given the current environment and the gelatinous spines of legislators these days that we're going to push a proper fix to the parking lot bill to the floor. I think what you're more likely to see is a lukewarm incremental step that is really more along the lines of one step forward is two steps back, because it's going to set up a environment, if it passes, where they're going to tell us something along the lines of, let's let this settle for a year or two and see how it does, and then we'll come back maybe in 3 or 4 years and revisit it again.
Yeah, so hold off on your rights for a couple of years, and we'll try again down the line.
Yeah, yeah. Tread water until we decide we're going to pass a law that you can effectively use to save your life if you're commuting back and forth to work.
Now, I know that last year, and I think especially the year before last, FedEx, they were one of the major companies that were opposed to the parking lot bill, the safe commute bill. What are some of the other companies that you know of that are really don't want this to pass? They want to be able to fire their employees for bringing a vehicle on their property.
Well, what we have seen, just in terms of players on the opposition side and names that legislators are mentioning, certainly FedEx is one right at the forefront. I mean, they had representatives testifying in Senate judiciary hearings, for example, that they could, you know, fire people for having Bibles in their parked vehicles if they wanted to, that there were effectively no restraints on their discretion. Others that we saw, Volkswagen was putting pressure on, Vanderbilt and the UT campus police were putting pressure on, Bridgestone, if I recall, was putting pressure on, and then the state Tennessee Chamber of Commerce, which is, you know, sort of a shadowy voice that speaks for a great many businesses, was heavily involved in opposing the legislation.
What about the Farm Bureau? I think the first year, I don't know if it's actually the first year this legislation came out, but I think maybe it was the year before last, the Farm Bureau was against the safe commute bill. Didn't they kind of sit it out last year? Because I think maybe they caught some flack from some of their members.
Well, you know, frankly, most of them sat it out last year, and that's what tells us that there was some big deal cut between business and Ramsey. If you look, this bill, this is the sixth year this issue has been running with a great deal of focus. The first 4 years, which ended in 2012, there was a huge amount of political pressure and presence at the legislature by FedEx and its, you know, comrades, including the chamber, and there was a great deal of open discussion about property rights and an at-will state. And the discussion was predominantly focused on the ability of business to fire employees. And then interestingly, in 2013, last year, Ramsey announces at the end of 2012, I'm going to write a bill and it's going to solve all these problems. And Ramsey, in fact, wrote a bill, or at least had his name on it, and it was a disaster in terms of clarity, which is very disappointing from someone who claims to be the lieutenant governor. And what was interesting about that bill when it started to run is that FedEx and only FedEx showed up and made a obligatory opposition to it when it first came into the Senate and then disappeared. And really, as a practical matter, there was no other business lobbying openly against the bill or testifying against it. Everybody sort of shut up and went away. And that was paired with the fact that legislators that I would go see in 13 were telling me, you know, John, you're wasting your time lobbying against this bill. We've been told it's going to pass, and it's going to pass the way it's written without any amendments. And I thought that was sort of odd, particularly that early in the session, unless leadership had sort of put down a mandate basically telling the serfs in the legislature that don't waste your time or political resources trying to amend this bill. The fix is in. And then we found out, oddly enough, that the NRA and its baby lobbyists up here last year had told, apparently, House and Senate leadership that they were okay with Ramsey's bill and that they would not oppose it and it could go through the way it was, which I think ought to scare the religion out of most listeners, because, you know, people think the NRA is up there fighting hard for their Second Amendment rights, and to have them capitulate and knowingly back a bad bill should scare a lot of people. But I'm not sure it has, because I'm not sure people are even aware that part of the reason bad legislation is passing on Second Amendment rights is because the NRA's lobbyist isn't really effectively defending our rights or advocating for them to be advanced in the General Assembly.
Are we going to be stuck with this guy for a while, the current NRA guy?
Well, you know, I've been doing this 2 decades, and he is the seventh lobbyist they've had down here in that window of time. And most of them work down here a year or two, sometimes three, and then they frankly get better job offers. And his predecessor, who I think was not a very good or strong lobbyist, was here 6 years, and then she'd suddenly left. I don't know if she was fired or got a better job offer. In the middle of legislative session in 2012, and then this guy, the new one, came in, and I have been not just unpleased with the legislation that I've been told he's supporting, but outright disappointed in the fact that that's the best they can do with 100,000 members in the state drawing out millions of dollars a year in membership and donations, that we get a lobbyist that is green-lighting bad legislation.
So, I mean, and, you know, I think ideally, and I'm sure you would agree, if the TFA, which you guys are in the fight for gun rights at the state level, you know, what would it take to, make them, I won't say irrelevant, because I think you'd be hard-pressed to make the NRA irrelevant, but what would it take for the TFA to get the message out to these NRA members that, hey, look, guys, you know, they come down here and, you know, you're really not getting your money's worth when it comes to legislation in the state.
Well,
what would it take to make something like that happen?
Unfortunately, part of the message that's going to have to start getting out is people are going to have to understand that if you're an NRA member or a life member or an annual member or whatever level you are, it's not enough anymore just to rely on the NRA to zealously defend your interest at the General Assembly, you're almost going to have to start lobbying them, just like you call your legislators and say, hey, send us someone down here that understands the law, that's really fighting for our rights, and get this inexperienced lobbyist who's capitulating to whatever Ramsey and Harwell want out of here. And it's unfortunate that on top of paying our memberships and voluntary contributions, that we now have to not only worry about the legislature, but we have to worry probably even more about that lobbyist, because there are so many legislators who just by default look at the NRA as the expert in the nation on gun laws, and whatever the NRA says, they just assume, you know, they'll get a good rating and they won't lead them astray and they really know what they're talking about.
Well, okay, right now I'm scheduled to take a break, but I've had so many technical problems tonight that I'm not going to take a break, although I am going to have to do a little read here. So let me do this read, and then we can get right back to business. One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com, then click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad you did. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with John Harris from the Tennessee Firearms Association. John, the NRA apparently is not the ally they could be or should be, and right before I did the little break there, we were... You said that we may have to actually lobby the NRA to get good people here in Tennessee.
Oh, I think absolutely so. I mean, you know, they're willing to come in and have these Friends of NRA events and sell us all kinds of their stuff and you know, get us enrolled in their range training programs. But frankly, and you know, and keep in mind, too, the lobbyists that they send to Tennessee, unlike other states, is not assigned just to Tennessee. The lobbyist covers probably four, maybe five states, including Tennessee. So we got a part-timer that really doesn't understand the history or the law or even whether or not there are serious holes obvious on its face in the legislation. And you know, I work with National Association for Gun Rights. I work with Gun Owners of America. I work with some of the other big organizations, obviously not as big as the NRA, but they get a much better grasp of the problems and the immediate inadequacies of some of this legislation that legislators are walking around up there going, well, the NRA said it was okay.
Well, now, okay, you say you'll have one guy that might be covering four or five states. I would imagine as big as the NRA is that they would have at least, you would think they could assign at least one person to each state, at least here in the Southeast.
Well, yeah, you would think so. I mean, if you had 100,000 members in a state and you were pulling millions of dollars a year out of that state every year, you would think they could afford to put a full-time lobbyist in Tennessee. But they, you know, in the years I've been doing this, they've never had a full-time lobbyist here. It's always been this sort of shared, cover multiple states, because they assume, looking at it in the big picture, that compared to some other states, that Tennessee is a relatively good state for gun owners. And I'm not sure that's a perception that can even be accurately asserted anymore.
Yeah, not especially not with the current leadership. Now, at these Friends of the NRA events, do the A lot of people, of course, are members of TFA and of NRA, but do you guys come there in official capacity as the TFA to these events, or are you just there as a NRA member when you have these events?
No. I quit going to them because I realized a long time ago that although I was an NRA benefactor and I am actually on their speakers bureau and they've not sent me any of those in a while, obviously, but I'm one of their referral attorneys, that there are better places where I can spend my political allocated funds than giving it to the NRA. Frankly, they're not making much progress for us at the federal level. There are huge problems with ATF and the mismanagement of gun laws. But ask yourself, when's the last time anybody heard the NRA say anything about nullifying federal gun laws? And despite that huge void, we're starting to see state after state run Second Amendment Freedom Acts and pass them. And I submit that's not coming from the NRA because they don't embrace that doctrine.
Yeah.
But I quit giving to the NRA. I send my money and my time to TFA.
Yeah. Well, let's switch gears here a little bit. I was kind of surprised to see this bill, and I certainly don't have a problem with it, but House Bill 1883, which regards the possession and use of certain switchblade knives. Basically, this bill would legalize switchblades and knives over 4 inches. So.
Right.
How did that come about? I mean, normally switchblades, people kind of have a negative view of them. I'm just curious how this came up that somebody would promote it. I don't have a problem with it. A knife's a knife. I don't see a problem with it. But
the bill is actually on the Senate side carried by Senator Bell, who's a hunter outdoorsman from East Tennessee. And he didn't really talk with us much about it. He may have had a constituent bring it to him. But he filed that last year, and it was heavily amended and passed in such a watered-down fashion it was useless last year. And he's brought it back, and he makes a legitimate argument that arms under the Second Amendment are not firearms, but they're a multitude of hand weapons, and including swords and bayonets and other things. And so he's advancing this concept that switchblades, and in particular what I call automatic knives, which they don't have that stiletto look to them, which has been demonized, are really useful practical tools, particularly for people with amputees, and that they shouldn't be banned. And one of my hobbies, I like to fish, and I like to fish for stripe and white bass, which if you've got one on the line, sometimes you don't have an extra hand. So I fully believe that it's an appropriate thing for switchblades or automatics, whatever you want to call them, to be decriminalized in this state. And that's, as far as I know, that's where that's sort of coming from, is from Bell, and I suspect some constituent or constituents are doing it.
Okay. Senate Bill 276 by Kelsey, Restoration of Citizenship, allowing a person seeking to have their rights to citizenship restored to petition the court for certificate of employment restoration. And I'm just reading these off. This is off, of course, I'm sure it's familiar to you, the TFLAC legislative calendar for the week. So these are bills
right.
that you guys are supporting, and just if you can talk a little bit about that one.
Yeah, Tennessee's got three basic mechanisms, although there are several varieties of the restoration one. But if you've got a criminal conviction, you can pursue what's called a restoration of rights, which restores the rights that by law were impaired upon conviction. So the right to vote, sit on a jury, and hold public office are the three that are most commonly identified. Then beyond the restoration, you've got an expungement, which means the fact that you were even arrested or convicted is removed from the public record. And that's a distinct difference between that and a restoration. The fact of the arrest or conviction is still a public record with a restoration. Then you've got a pardon. And Kelsey's bill, it really doesn't seem to accomplish a lot because the basic restoration statutes, it's been on the books for years, restores fundamentally all of the rights with the limited exception since 2008 of your Second Amendment rights, which again is a travesty brought to us by the NRA. But I'm not sure that Kelsey's bill, unless it's to impair the at-will doctrine to some extent or some specific disqualifying statutes like licensure statutes for nurses and other medical professionals, really accomplishes a lot for most people.
Okay. Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman, Duke Brooks, calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hangar flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com. Where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee and Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. We're talking with John Harris, president of the Tennessee Firearms Association. John, we got about another 15 minutes here or so, if you can stay with us that long. What was kind of turn it over to you? I know there's some other things on this list here, but what other legislation or issues would you like to kind of make everybody aware of?
Well, you know, this is going to be a fast year, so I don't really see a whole lot getting pushed through without the support of leadership. But, for example, Tennessee Firearms Association, we really got behind three particular bills as part of our package this year. One was a reintroduction and a stronger version of the Firearms Freedom Act amendments that we're running last year as Senate Bill 250. Those have been reintroduced by Senator Beavers in the Senate side, which directly confronts the Senate with the 10th Amendment issues of to what extent can and should the federal government have any jurisdiction over firearms that are within a particular state. And this gets back to what we said earlier about the NRA not pursuing, although it's the biggest gorilla and could, the issue of nullification of any federal acts involving firearms ownership, transfer, or manufacture. That's what Senator Beaver's 2014 Firearms Freedom Act addresses specifically under the Second and Tenth Amendments. Then we've got a bill pending that addresses a complete preemption of all local county and municipality regulation of firearms in any shape, form, or fashion. And that really came about because there is a very curiously written Attorney General's opinion that came out last year that's created the potential for a Pandora's box opening up local regulation. And we're trying to put a stop to it before that gets moving. Then we've got what we call the motor vehicle property rights, which you could either call safe commute or parking lot, depending on how you want to pitch it, but it's all the same thing. And our version of that concept says basically a citizen should have the absolute right to store anything that they legally own or possess in a vehicle they legally own or possess, excluding company cars, in any place that they have permission to park a vehicle without risk of criminal prosecution or job termination or impairment. And those are basically the three concepts we were pushing this year. And as I indicated to your listeners earlier, Lieutenant Governor Ramsey has basically thrown roadblocks in front of all of those bills, and so what we've been trying to do is take legislation that's otherwise moving and amend some or all of those concepts onto those otherwise moving bills.
Now, is he opposing the bills or is he opposing who they came from? Because I know it's obvious that Senator Beavers is kind of on his list, you could say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think a large part of it is the fact that she is the Senate sponsor. I think a part of it is that he is really feeling a lot of pressure from the Tennessee Firearms Association calling him out, particularly on his representations and just absolute misrepresentations about what his law did last year. I mean, it's sadly laughable, and we've not held back in pointing that out. And then I think a third part of it is that he has some divided loyalties or priorities that favor big business and local governments over doing what the Constitution calls for.
Well, the bill you talked about last, the motor vehicle property rights, safe commute, I mean, that's essentially making the Castle Doctrine that Tennessee passed actually mean something. Because we have
absolutely
a doctrine,
and that's
but
exactly
it doesn't
mean
the way
it's
written right now.
That's correct. In 2008, I believe, 8 or 9, Tennessee expanded the Castle Doctrine, which had been on the books since 1989, to say that for purposes of state law, your vehicle, your motorhome, your tent, your camper, your hotel room for those purposes is equivalent to your personal residence, and that you have certain rights and certain privileges regarding those that are coexistent with your home.
Well, so then, you know, really with that, why are we even having these other discussions? I mean, these other bills basically just give some meaning to the Castle. They actually put into effect what it claimed to do. It would seem to
right.
me
well,
like
the only bill that,
other,
that really go ahead.
It would seem to me like these other the current situation is a violation of the Castle Doctrine.
Oh, I certainly think so. And part of the problem is, you know, big business got off on this tangent of, well, you know, this parking lot bill invades our property rights. And frankly, there's a lot of conservatives, Republicans, libertarians, whatever you want to, you know, but conservatives, they sort of bit into that because they didn't understand the concept of property rights fully. And they bought off on it, and Ron Ramsey slickered them with it. But the fact is that, you know, the Castle Doctrine and the concept of the scope of the Castle Doctrine fully justifies the motor vehicle property rights approach as opposed to piecemealing the doctrine into very constrained parameters like Ramsey's trying to do.
Now, I know you said earlier that other than fixing the parking lot bill, you're not very optimistic that anything will get through. You are trying to attach some of these provisions to other bills as amendments. I would think with 250, I mean, there was some contention last year, and Kelsey caught a lot of flack for 250. Oh, really, he caught a lot of flack for his interpretation of the Supremacy Clause, which pretty much nullifies the Bill of Rights by his interpretation.
Correct.
I would think we could get somewhere on at least the concepts, at least the idea behind 250, whether we get it through Senator Beavers. There's got to be at least one other senator that'll take that up.
Well, you know, Here's the dynamic we're working against. They've made it clear that they want to adjourn the 108th General Assembly as early in April as possible so that they can get out there and campaign. And to the extent that any of these other firearms bills are going to have any hearings at all in subcommittees this year, they all go through Kelsey's Senate committee for practical purposes. And he has refused to put some of the bills even on notice and has taken the position that he's going to schedule a special Second Amendment docket But he's not going to do that until after all the budget hearings are concluded, which will consume a good part of the month of March. And so then what you're faced with is a short window of time after the budget hearings conclude to have the bills heard in the committee systems, and the House isn't going to move their bills at all if the Senate's sitting on them, reach the floor, potentially have to deal with conference committees, and then potentially even have to deal with veto overrides. And what we're seeing is that they have intentionally designed the system this year to implement enough delay to not have to vote against the bills, but instead to say it was just such a busy year we didn't have time to get to them.
We didn't have enough time for your rights, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to pass a bill or a resolution to encourage, you know, Sean Hannity to move to Tennessee from New York, but they don't have time to deal with your genuine concerns about being able to defend your life and your family while, you know, going about your daily affairs.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought that was pretty ridiculous. I'm like, if you're going to do resolutions that don't mean anything, and you know, how about a resolution that we trade Hannity for Haslam? Haslam can go to New York, and we'll take Hannity. I'm not a big Hannity fan, but I'll take him over Haslam any day.
Well, I think Haslam's looking that direction anyhow. And, you know, and that's an interesting – that is one thing that generated some degree of conversation in the shadows and closets at the General Assembly is who steps up if – it materializes that Haslam's family in control of the oil company do get federally indicted. You know, will Bill even run for governor in November if he's got to run back and protect the family fortune? And if he doesn't and no one else is qualified by the April cutoff, does Ron Ramsey become governor?
Well, what does the state constitution say?
Yeah, well, it says Ramsey becomes governor. You know, presumptively there would be a special election at some point to sort that out, but for a period of time, you know, we'd put the control, the reins of state government in the hands of a man who can't write a four-page bill clearly enunciating property rights between motor vehicles and landowners.
Well, but we guess we got rid of a guy who was a Bloomberg mayor and joined the NRA, became a life member of the NRA right before the election in 2010.
Right. What a laughable travesty.
Yeah, and it's a shame. I'm surprised
but, you know,
they really.
Go ahead. There is actually a fair amount of pondering if potentially Haslam is planning to go do that, depending on how close these indictments are, because most people think they're coming, it's just when. You know, are plans being made, for example, that someone like Beth Harwell could enter the governor's race at the last minute with some kind of assurances that Haslam will pass the torch before November or before the August primaries?
Well, obviously,
and I'll tell you,
if no contenders already showed up,
to that,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Is that Lamar may not run 6 years? So, what if Haslam lets, say, Harwell or Ramsey come in just under the wire to run for governor, walks away with the primary with no real Democrat opposition? He finishes out his term, then goes back and runs pilot for a couple of years to stabilize it. And then in 2016, Lamar retires and Haslam gets appointed as our next senator.
Yeah, I've heard that story too, and I've heard that possibility. That would be, well, I don't guess it could be any worse than Lamar, but you can't get much worse than Lamar.
But Haslam's, you know, I mean, Alexander's right there with him 62% of the time.
Yeah. Well, and as I understand it, the Haslam family is responsible for Alexander and Corker in terms of getting them there, getting them where they are with all their money. So we have a lot to blame them for, even before the guy ever took office. He gave us Alexander and Corker, or their family gave us Alexander and Corker before he ever got elected.
Oh, yeah. One thing you say about Pilot Oil is they're great at floating out the liberals.
Yeah. But it's disgraceful that those kind of people can get elected in Tennessee. I mean, we're a fairly red state, and I just blows my mind that we don't have a decent senator and that our governor could easily fit in New York or California or any other liberal state.
Well, you know, we've had a history of letting those Northeast liberals come down here and become mayors and legislators and governors. I forgot about, you know, Bredesen and others that made that great migratory move like the other carpetbaggers.
Yeah, well, it's past time we send them back. Well, John,
yeah,
I appreciate
it.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you're right. It is time we send them back. And the crisis is that, you know, people just have to understand that we're being infested and infiltrated with liberals masquerading as conservatives. And we've got to have the willingness and the capacity and the resources to say, no, not on our Dixie anymore. Y'all need to leave the state and go back to whatever, you know, liberal cave you crawled out of.
Well, we got a lot to send back, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, John, I appreciate you being with us, and I apologize for the trouble getting you on. Don't know what to do about it, and you know it doesn't happen every time, but it happens more than I'd like. But I appreciate your patience, and hope to have you back on again.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you for letting me participate tonight.
All right. Well, thanks again, and take care. And we will talk to you later. We'll see you on the 27th at the Sheriff Mack event, where you're also speaking. This will be the first time that I've actually, you know, got to hear you give a speech, and I've heard good things about your speech making ability. So I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. I'll be glad you'll be there.
And hopefully we'll have a good turnout from the TFA.
Planning on it. We're doing what we can to stir up the interest and get those people buying tickets.
All righty. Well, we appreciate it, and take care, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Good night.
Have a good one. All right. That last reference was to the Sheriff Mack event. That's February 27th. At 6:30 p.m. at Union University in Jackson, Tennessee. You can go to the Tennessee 8th District website to get your tickets. If you just Google Sheriff Mack event in Jackson, Tennessee, it will take you to the site. That's all you have to do. I've got something I want to play here before we go. I meant to play it earlier, and I got distracted, and it didn't happen. Let's see if it will play. And this is in reference to Common Core. We talked about that a little bit earlier. I told you Karen Bracken has an ad running on the radio station. So let's see if we can get this ad to play. Oh, we're running out of time here. All right. Well, like everything else tonight, it is not going to work. Hey, I appreciate you listening. Sorry for the technical problems. But we will be back again next week, and hopefully everything will work out fine. You guys have a great week. Thanks for listening. Take care. Hey, thanks, John. Sorry.